Good evening. Welcome to Radio Program July. I'm your host, Nicole, from MN Association Hong Kong's media team and Malo ASEAN Association's second executive committee. Gender inequality, which stems from various causes like religion and government policies, is an alarming issue in the Asia-Pacific region. In this radio program, contributors from diverse backgrounds would share what they know about the mistreatment of men and women, talk about their personal experiences of being stereotyped based on gender, and finally, make recommendations to improve gender equality. Today, we are very honored to have Allison and Marta, Cherie and Anston from Model ASEAN and MN respectively joining us. Before we dive deeper into our discussion, let's welcome Anston to introduce MN, followed by Allison to introduce Model ASEAN. Anston, please.
Hi, this is Anston from MN Association. I'm very pleased to be here. So what you need to know about me is that I'm the publicity director of MN, and mainly that means that means doing Instagram things, which is very fun. Okay, so MN Association was made around this time last year in 2020, and the reason that we chose the name MN was because it means one who is fearless and courageous, in the context of I think the Arabic language, meaning that we essentially wanted everyone, regardless of gender, to be able to have a fearless and courageous like attitude about them in order to enjoy their daily lives. And with that in mind, MN does a few things, which focuses on the creation of a loving and caring community for people of all genders. And that includes hosting events like movie nights, having conferences to speak about gender issues and also policies, and also having a Discord, which unfortunately died. I'm very sorry about that. We've also tried hosting other events, like a visit to the Pride Parade, the one here held locally in Hong Kong, except that didn't really work out because of COVID, which is sad. We've also tried hosting other events, like visiting the local Pride Parade in Hong Kong, but that didn't work out because of COVID, which is very fun. And we also do a few other things, like writing editorials, where students from around Hong Kong, mainly those in SBCC, write about gender issues or essentially anything related to LGBTQ and gender-related things. We also do podcasts like the one we're doing right now, which is also very cool. The final thing that I'll be saying here is that you can join us through going to our Instagram at mn.official, I think, and also contribute to us or contact us at any time through the same platform. And I think that's it from me. Just handing it over to you, Allison.
Thank you, Anston. Hi, everyone. I'm Allison, the representative of the International Model ASEAN Associations, and I am the Deputy Secretary General of the International Model ASEAN Associations. We are established in 2015, and we aspire to be the leading organizer of global youth activities by conducting events such as simulative academic conferences, ambassador programs, and forums. Delightfully, on the 16th of January 2020, we were granted the authorization to use the name ASEAN by the ASEAN Secretariat. We connect with youth organizations. We partner with the ASEAN Foundation, the cultural body established by the ASEAN Charter, and the ASEAN Youth Organization, which runs the AYO Ambassador Programs. And we are very proud that we are supported by the Hong Kong Federation of Youth Groups. Another highlight of International Model ASEAN includes, as at July 2021, 8 out of 10 consulates general of ASEAN member states participated in the opening ceremonies of our activities. And we have also co-organized a bilingual conference with Latin American delegation. In recent year, we have also been exploring more, and not only we conduct ASEAN simulative conferences, we also conduct Model UN, Model EU. Our second executive committee made up of people from Turkey, India, Hong Kong, Poland. Our organization embraces diversity and welcome people from different religious, political, cultural background to join, yet does not participate in any religious or political events. And now I'll pass the time to Nicole.
Okay, thank you for the introductions. Now, fellow contributors, what do you know about women or men being mistreated in the Asia Pacific region?
So I'll talk about my case first. So I'm Cherie from Emin, and I'll talk about Malaysia's dual legal system and how it affects women and men differently. So Malaysia has a dual legal system with common law at the federal level, which is kind of based on the UK system with more Western style laws. And this applies to every citizen in Malaysia. And at the same time, concurrently, there is also Sharia law, which is Islamic law, which is based on the Quran and the Hadith. And this only applies to Muslim citizens at the state level. So it's implemented differently in every state. However, since the letter of the law is exactly the same in all states, no matter what, the law can be interpreted differently though. So it can be interpreted quite loosely or strictly, since it was written like a few thousand years ago, but it still remains fundamentally patriarchal. And so there are some gender expectations on both women and men that can be considered quite toxic or maybe outdated. For example, men are subject to harsher floggings or canings than women. This may be due to the expectation that men should be more tough than women, and yet at the same time, women may be mistreated as one of the laws allows a husband to beat his wife due to disobedience under some interpretations, and this has indeed been enforced a few times, in which a man was left to his own devices scot-free after he beat his wife. And according to Sisters in Islam, which is an organization campaigning for the rights of women under an Islamic lens, suicide, revictimization of rape victims, non-Muslim women flogged for alcohol sale, and even erasing Muslim women's economic empowerment through strict social censure of contact between the sexes has been clearly documented. And so, despite the more progressive atmosphere in many countries, Malaysia has actually been going back to more conservative ways, especially in the Islamic circles. And due to this rising political conservatism, the rights of both women and men have been affected quite heavily in recent years. About this issue, I personally disagree with the rigidity of the interpretations of the laws, especially in some states, and I think this lack of separation between the religious, the judicial, and the governing bodies really poses a threat to justice in Malaysia because of the lack of checks and balances between the different departments to ensure fair treatment to each Malaysian citizen. And to be honest, I don't think I'm quite qualified to speak on religious beliefs as a non-Muslim, but I think there should be a way to reconcile the welfare of all the stakeholders involved, such as the Malaysian citizens and the affected victims, and also the offenders, and the livelihood of Muslim people under the Sharia law can be improved as well. As to what some non-government organizations have done about the issue, the aforementioned Sisters of Islam, which is a major NGO campaigning feminism within the framework of Islam, holds many conferences discussing the welfare of women and children in Islam especially. They publish articles online from an Islam rights-based perspective, showing that Islam and human rights need not stand in opposition, despite the strict letter of the law. However, government bodies have actually been tightening restrictions due to the increasingly conservative social political climate to win over the vote of more socially conservative voters. Yes, and that concludes my sharing. Thank you.
Thank you, Cherie, for the amazing sharing. So next, will we have Marta respond to the sharing and also talk some more about her views on the issue?
I think that's really interesting. And now, a similar situation happens in the Philippines. So while doing the research, I found four main reasons why there is gender discrimination and inequality in the Philippines. And these reasons, first of all, include the traditional gender roles in the society. So discouragement from the families. So women face a lot of discouragement from the families when it comes to pursuing careers, especially high-paid careers, which enforces traditional gender roles. and prevents girls from getting proper education, and also encourages them to rather stay at home and take care of the family rather than actually studying and pursuing their careers. The second is lack of guidance in many different areas of life, and also lack of proper medicine, proper services for the females. So for example, just an example from the medicine field, 11 women daily die due to pregnancy and child-related issues because there is no guidance for females and there is no proper services that could offer them safety in many different areas of life. And these are the areas that they are expected to participate in, such as pregnancy and having a child. Third problem is gender-based violence, including domestic violence, which is not recognized by the general public and not talked about enough to prevent it in any way. So basically, it is something relatively normal and not recognized as a general problem, even though it should be. The fourth reason is women are, if they are getting jobs, they are mostly getting repetitive and manual jobs, which nowadays are becoming automated by robots, by AI. So of course they lack skills, they lack proper skills to advance, and then that all goes back to this first problem of kind of expectations that families have, and lack of proper education, lack of ability to pursue anything that is more than just a low-paid job. And I think that these are the four main issues about gender inequality in the Philippines that I would like to mention.
Thank you, Marta, for guiding us to explore issues in the Philippines. So finally, Anston, what do you think about the issue?
Hi, it's me again. So with regards to what Marta and Sharib told us about discrimination in the Philippines and also Malaysia, I think it's there's a very wide spectrum of things that was covered. Majorly in Sharib's case, something about the legal side of things, like how legal protection isn't really given to citizens, especially people of different genders. In Marta's case, she told us about more traditional things, right? About like how people are influenced by traditional norms. So what I want to introduce to the table right now is something more economic, as in my example that I'm gonna talk about is Japan, and how there's like this really huge gender gap, and not only like wages, but also politics in general. So I guess that's also the fourth aspect. Okay, right. So first of all, let's talk about the politics within Japan and how it really isn't balanced. So the thing is, even within the supposedly like woman-loving government, or like the one under Shinzo Abe right now, like the Prime Minister of Japan. Even in that cabinet, there's only one amongst 14 members, I believe, that are women. And there's like this huge ratio or like of imbalance within that environment. You can pretty much imagine how bad it is within the rest of Japan. So I'm just gonna elaborate on this in an economic way. Okay, cool. In terms of male-dominated management, and I'm going to refer to the paper written by Kazuo Yamaguchi in the IMF. So within this paper, right, he says that there's like this really huge gender wage disparity because of how only 6.4% of women within the economy of Japan, only 6.4, which is a very small percentage, hold a position of department director or some equivalent position of power. And there are other statistics here about how there are only 8.9 and 47% of those of a small leadership position. And I'd like to point out that all of these are less than 1 in 5, which is like 20%, which is something quite worrying for this whole like gender imbalance in the workforce. And some other thing is that only 21% of these people, like only 21% of these positions can be explained in economic terms. So like, like in some instances, women really, like in some instances, there were men within working positions of like directors and stuff because they were more capable. But in other instances, as in, let me do some quick maths, in 79% of instances, there were no clear explanations as to why, you know, some competent women weren't taking the spot over some other people, namely men, which is why this whole thing is pretty worrying. And to add on that note, I think given Japan's role, like given Japan's status as a nation country, tradition and stuff also holds like a very large importance there, and therefore it can be seen that women are also seriously underrepresented in like other industries in Japan, such as like research, engineering, law, and accounting, all of which are pretty much discouraged by traditional norms. Even though that might have changed in recent years, the difference is still glaring because in comparison between Japan and the United States, there's like this really huge gap, and there's like a graphic here that I'm referring to, but I can't show it on the podcast. I'm really sorry about that. But the thing is, there's like this. I'm making hand gestures right now, but you can't see it. That's very annoying. Yeah, there's like a really huge gap between people within those jobs in that industry, and between men and women, namely. And I think that's it for my short introduction to gender discrimination in Japan.
Thank you, Anston, for your sharing. It's very comprehensive. Thank you all contributors for sharing cases of women or men being mistreated in the Asian Pacific region. So next we'll be moving on to another section, which is more close to home, which is the sharing of own experiences of being stereotyped based on gender. And by gender, we are including non-binary or transgender people. So contributors, I want to know what happened, what did you feel at that time, and what do you feel about it now?
Alright, so I'll go first. I will consider myself fairly gender non-conforming, meaning that I have been subjected to quite a few attempts to make me conform in my life. But I think an experience that stood out to me would be the time I just entered this secondary school that must not be named. I was forced to try on this new school uniform by my parents, and this applies to quite a few secondary schools in Hong Kong, but the girls' school uniform of this school is Chansam. It's a traditional Chinese dress that traditionally quite accentuates the feminineness and the gracefulness of one's figure. And I was also told by my parents to act more womanly and graceful as befitting of such a school uniform. And to be honest, at that time, I felt quite trapped because I was subjected to this against my will. And I don't feel quite comfortable expressing myself this way yet. And I was also very anxious, and more informally, I would say that I was dying inside. Yeah, and I was very uncomfortable at being forced into this narrow box of acceptable behaviors for a girl. As of now, I still kind of resent having to wear the school uniform. I still have quite a ways before I graduate. But instead of trying to fight the school rules or the social norms that are forcing me to wear this uniform, I've kind of resigned to just wearing it. Like, it's just a piece of cloth, it's no big deal. And at this stage, I don't think society in general or Hong Kong is quite ready to accept that people may not be fully conforming to this box of behaviors. I'm not saying that Hong Kong is especially restrictive compared to the example of Malaysia that I raised prior, but there can certainly be some room for improvement. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Cherie, for generously sharing your own experience. So next, Allison, what do you have to say?
Hi everyone, it's Allison again. Hope you aren't too bored. Well, I am a STEM person. I participate in STEM competitions, and in Hong Kong, not many girls would participate in STEM competition. And I remember one time joining a drone competition. Basically, all the participants were males or from boys' school, and there was a thing that I remember very, very clearly. The first runner-up of the competition was a girl group, and I remember the MC saying very surprisingly, "Wow, it's a girl's school." Well, although I did ask him why he said that and he said that, he was just very surprised that it was a girl's school, which is very surprising for him. And at that time, as a female participant, I actually feel a little insulted and a little gender stereotype at that time. Does that mean girls couldn't participate well in a STEM competition? And another thing is a thing that I always hear from teachers at school is that, oh, usually boys are better at math or physics or at science. And as a girl who really likes science, I also feel very insulted. Girls could be equally good at science subjects or math just as boys. And I really hope that every single person could think before they say anything. It may seem like a very small thing, but it could actually make a very big difference.
Thank you, Allison. I hope all our audience take Allison's advice. So next, Anston.
Hi, it's me again. Before we move on, I think it is very important to note that everyone should think before they say anything. Especially with regards to gender things. As in, it's very easy to have things that you normally speak about, even casually. Slip out when you're speaking to someone who is of the different gender or anything. And this is especially relevant to me because I'm from a boys' school, which is... And the silence here is to express my my emotions of being in a boys' school, especially with their views on different genders, which is very cool and fun. And that was ironic. But okay. And with regards to that, I'm going to be talking about more subtle experiences that I've experienced. I feel like something we all experience. But the experience I have to share is me and my family eating at the family dinner we have usually in Chinese New Year, which is also known as Chu Di Fan in Chinese. And this form of discrimination, and I'm speaking as a high school male person, this form of discrimination, although subtle, is still somewhat, jarring. So some background for my family, right? Because there are two very different families within my family, one on my dad's side and one on my mom's side. Surprisingly, this discrimination does not come from my more Eastern, quote-unquote, family, or my side on my mother's side, but from my more westernized its more westernized counterpart on my dad's side, my dad's sister, as in my aunt, and my other aunt and my other aunt. So the thing about them, right, is that although they're very cool and cute and very loving, and I love them a lot as well, they still go assert things like, oh hey, men should be strong. Oh hey, when are you gonna earn money for me so I can retire peacefully? And I don't want to do that, you know. not to be selfish. I mean filial piety. I'm sorry. Is still very important. But the thing is, I think it's time to stop asserting these things on male counterparts in society, and to expect the same of pretty much everyone. But the second example I have is of something way more recent, as in way more recent than the family dinner that happened in February every year. in recent times, I think it was like on last Sunday, there was a certain politician who spoke out against like a LGBTQ show called A Son's Love, which if you have not seen, which is pretty good. But the thing about it, right, is that it's pretty gay as well. This certain politician spoke out against it, and it's called like blasphemy against certain political systems. And I think it was kind of insensitive for him to say something like that because of how in this rapidly progressive world of ours, more genders are being embraced by society, and it, by speaking out in a position such as it is, it sort of deters a lot of people from embracing it more fervently. And that's it.
Thank you, Anston, for sharing more about what he thinks on the stereotypes against men. So, what about Marta? What do you think?
So, I would like to share something that is similar to what Allison said. So, in the future, currently I'm preparing to pursue a career in international relations or humanitarian aid and in this kind of field. And it's obviously a male-dominated field. Like, I don't know exact statistics, but most of the politicians, most of the people working in international relations, they are men. So obviously there are many misconceptions and mistreatment of women who try to pursue a career in that field. And some of the stereotypes is that women are not tough enough or that they are too sensitive to actually have opinions, to actually speak up against something or pro something, and they are not down to earth, maybe not serious enough to actually make important decisions, which I think is a huge problem, especially in the field of international relations, where we need different perspectives, where we need different voices, but they are often not granted because of these misconceptions. And another thing that I often hear whenever I tell someone, whether it's my family or just other people, that I want to pursue a career in that field, is that, this career requires sometimes long working time or like working in different countries, so traveling a lot and so on. And that does not comply with the traditional kind of gender roles that a female should stay at home more than not, basically. And I think that is also a problem, this kind of old school mindset that that women should not have careers that include maybe not staying at home or not staying close to home because they have responsibilities at home, which is not necessarily true. These are not the only responsibilities that people should have. So, these are some of the comments that I hear a lot whenever I share that with people. And basically it's a big problem that even in the 21st century, where fortunately we are getting more women into politics, into international relations, it's still so hard for many young people to pursue a career in that because of these stereotypes. And I think this is what I wanted to share from my recent perspective from my university. Yes.
So thank you, Marta, and thank you, the contributors, for sharing your own experiences of being stereotyped because of gender in different contexts. It was very comprehensive, and I hope the audience learned more about these stereotypes. So let's move on to our final section. How can our audience help improve gender equality and halt gender stereotypes? What can they do if they're just sitting at home?
So just now we mentioned some certain gender stereotypes which have affected us personally. And I think that within this gendered society, I think it's quite unavoidable that we do form or do have some internalized thoughts about this, about these gendered stereotypes. And I think the most important thing, even if you don't donate or conduct activism or something similar. I think the most important thing is to be mindful and more aware of these internalized prejudices. So at times you may have some certain immediate thoughts that jump at you, like, oh, this guy shouldn't be that soft or feminine. But I think it's more important to be more aware of these thoughts. Like, you can catch yourself thinking these, and also don't beat yourself up. You have to forgive yourself, because again, it's quite unavoidable living in this gender society, and there really is no way that a man or a woman ought to act. Some may say that stereotypes exist because they're accurate or for a reason, but even if they're accurate maybe most of the time, they aren't accurate all the time, and also at some point this just becomes like a self-fulfilled prophecy in which, oh, I expect you to behave that way, and then you behave that way. And yes, it's quite unproductive to actually fully internalize these thoughts, I think. Yeah. What about you guys?
I think the bit about stereotypes is very important in that, like, it's and I use this term loosely, but stereotypes are very much a social construct, as in like, they're made up of what we think of people and are not really based on anything factual. So in that regard, change really begins with us as a community, instead of like conducting whatever scientific research into the subject, because it really starts with us having different views of other people. What about you guys?
I think that especially now in a very globalized world, there is not a single way to be someone. So there are so many perspectives, so many ways to do things, and so many lifestyles that we can choose from, that saying that, for example, a female should be like this and a male should be like this, is a little bit narrow-minded and a little bit outdated. So I think keeping that in mind and recognizing that people can be just themselves without necessarily fitting into these social norms is the best way they can be.
And be bold, be brave, don't be bounded by the stereotypes given to you by those narrow-minded people. You can live your life perfectly.
Thank you. So, that concludes our radio program, July. I hope the audience learned more about gender stereotypes from our program. Let's review what we learned today. So, our first section, we talked about women or men being mistreated in the Asia-Pacific region. Then we shared our own experiences of being stereotyped because of gender. And finally, we hope you all learned some solutions to improve gender equality and halt gender stereotypes. So with that, once again, I would really like to thank Allison, Marta, Cherie, and Anston for joining us on today's program, and MN Association Hong Kong and Model ASEAN Association for participating in this podcast. Thank you and good night.